So I've got a pair of binoculars here. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so when I put these to my eyes, I can suddenly see things that are far away. Distance objects suddenly become very close and become very large. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I lose my peripheral vision. And this is what's happening in the church right now. Christians, followers of Jesus, are watching cable news or doom scrolling the internet for 9 hours a day. And so we are starting to have this vision where we see distant happenings and we see world affairs 9 hours a day. Meanwhile, our peripheral vision is gone. We cannot see that neighbor in distress. We cannot see that person who needs to know the love of Jesus. Now, distant happenings, world affairs, that's God's job. Our job is to love our neighbor. But with this, with screens in front of our eyes, we're doing God's job for him, and we're neglecting the job that he gave us to do, which is to love our neighbor.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ, welcome to Empowered Manhood. Hey guys, welcome back to the Empowered Manhood Podcast. My name is Mike Hatch, and I'm here as usual with Chris Bullinger, my fearless co-host. How you doing, Chris?
Good, Mike. How are you?
Good, man. Good to be back with you. And we're excited to have with us once again, David Murrow. David, thank you for joining us again.
Glad to be back.
And just as a reminder, David is he's authored 5 books now. Has written articles in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune. You've probably seen him on PBS or NBC Nightly News, Fox News Channel. You've been around, and since your first book that you wrote, Why Men Hate Going to Church, it has really opened up all sorts of influence and presence out there.
Yeah, well, that's. But what a lot of people don't know about me is I'm actually a television producer by trade. For 4 decades, I've worked in the TV business. And so have watched as society has become more and more involved in screen time. And the average North American, pre-pandemic, the average North American was found to be watching screen content about 9 hours a day. Literally every spare moment we have now is devoted to looking down at our phones, looking at a screen on the wall, playing video games, or just watching traditional television. Yeah. So we're seeing the world through TV, and it's affected how we're seeing the world, and it's led to a lot of division in the church and a lot of deception, particularly among young Christians. And so that's why I wrote my newest book.
That's right. Drowning in screen time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're coming from this, obviously from the perspective of that TV producer who's on the other side of the screen trying to grab people's attention. So I appreciate it because you've got an incredible perspective to bring to this.
Yeah, I do. In fact, there's a metaphor that I like to use that kind of explains how screens are changing the way we perceive the world. So I've got a pair of binoculars here. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so when I put these to my eyes, I can suddenly see things that are far away. Distance objects suddenly become very close and become very large. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I lose my peripheral vision. For instance, if I were looking at a moose through these glasses, I live in Alaska, so that's a possibility.
Normal for
you. If I were looking at a moose at a distance, that moose would seem very large and right there in front of me, but I wouldn't even see a moose that would walk right up next to me. I lose my peripheral vision. I gain distance and I lose peripheral vision. And this is what's happening in the church right now. Christians, followers of Jesus, are watching cable news or doom scrolling the internet for 9 hours a day. And so we are starting to have this vision where we see distant happenings and we see world affairs 9 hours a day. Meanwhile, our peripheral vision is gone. We cannot see that neighbor in distress. We cannot see that person who needs to know the love of Jesus. Instead, all we do is watch Fox News and talk about how horrible the government is and all these threats that are coming toward us, or global warming is going to destroy us, or it's just hour after hour of this that we see these distant happenings. Now, distant happenings, world affairs, that's God's job. Our job is to love our neighbor. But with this, with screens in front of our eyes, we're doing God's job for him, and we're neglecting the job that he gave us to do, which is to love our neighbor. And that's the tragedy in the church today right now. The church is not divided over issues of theology. It's divided over issues of what we're seeing on our screens. It's polluting our minds. It's breaking our hearts, and it's destroying churches. And if we're going to be faithful followers of Jesus, we've got to put down these binoculars, and we've got to do the things that, the two great commandments, love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul and strength. And you do that by reading God's word, by spending time with other Christians, and love your neighbor as yourself. And you do that by putting these down and getting your peripheral vision back and seeing your neighbor instead of ignoring your neighbor or flaming your neighbor on social media.
Wow. So, Dave, why are the binoculars, why is screen time so popular? I mean, obviously 9 hours a day pre-pandemic, it's probably worse now. And I'm assuming that's up from, you know, 5 hours or 6 hours 10 years ago. I don't know the numbers.
It is.
Why is it so attractive, especially to men?
Well, first of all, we can do it all the time now because we carry screens with us in our pockets. That wasn't true before 2007. But with the advent of the iPhone, we now have screen content available to us 24/7. Our brains are wired for novelty. When we see something new, we feel a dollop of pleasure. Novelty has always meant something you can eat or something that can eat you. So it's wired into our brains as a means of survival. And so the producers of screen content know this about our brains. And so they constantly push novelty toward us, new things, exotic things that stimulate that part of our brain. And, you know, this is why the news is always so extreme, especially left-wing news on like MSNBC or right-wing news on the Fox News channel. They're always going to be calling out the most extreme, upsetting thing, especially about the other side of the political spectrum, because we're also, our brains are wired to respond to threats. And certain people have a very high, low tolerance for threats. They get scared at things. And so they consume this cable news all day, and they're convinced that, oh my gosh, the world is falling. The world has never been worse. You know, we're moments away from destruction. And so it's definitely an unhealthy place for Christians to hang out. We need to be hanging out in the slower paced, eternal place of God's word rather than the novelty of the moment. It gets our brains riled up, but is actually a deception.
Before interview, you had talked about before about this idea of I forget how you said it now, something like the bouncing ball or the moving object that is particularly appealing to men. Could you just tell us a little bit about that? I thought that was really profound.
Yeah, men are attracted to 3D objects that fly through space. Our brains we're visual spatial, as it's called. Our brains are particularly thrilled by that. That's just why we love to watch football or baseball or any other basketball. And the most exciting play is not, you know, 2 yards up the middle. It's the Hail Mary at the end of the game to win the game. You know, it's the ball flying through, or, you know, the three-pointer. The NBA has learned that the more three-pointers there are in a game, the more the fans like it, because they like to see that ball flying through space. So, you know, men are visually oriented. We're oriented for action. And what screens do is they provide us an unlimited supply of novelty and objects flying through space that occupies our brains. And our brains never have a chance to rest. If you think about way back in ancient times before 2007, we actually had to sit quietly and look at the world around us. I mean, imagine, can you imagine people actually doing that? Can you imagine a person standing in line in the grocery store and just looking at other people, or maybe praying for other people, or praying for God's wisdom as they interact with the cashier, for example? That used to happen before 2007, but now it doesn't, because we're watching CNN, or we're playing Candy Crush, or we're doing something on our phones that distracts our brains and doesn't let our brain rest.
Yeah. Men used to throw actual objects through the air and catch them together.
What? Really?
Yeah, they did at some point.
I seem to remember something about the Vince Lombardi. Was it? Never mind. Yeah,
that's right.
Are we seeing similar time on screens across demographics? Are we seeing, you know, are older people on it less than younger people? Because, you know, the current generation, I guess if iPhone was 2007, so let's say people under 20, they really have only known a world where you have a phone all the time. And yeah. I know my kids had so-called dumb phones initially, but mm-hmm. you know, they can only text on those, and they didn't keep their attention that long. But now everybody has fully capable, quote, smartphones. But what are we seeing in terms of age groups, men versus women, when it comes to screen time?
Actually, screen time is almost equal across age groups. Now, how they use those screens are different.
Okay.
Older people still tend to watch traditional television. The average Fox News viewer is something like 65.
Okay.
This is why on traditional TV, all the ads are for hearing aids and Medicare and bladder control, pharmaceuticals. Ask your doctor if Florida is right for you. But and then young people are watching micro videos. TikTok is now the most popular video channel. In just 2 years, it has dethroned every other social medium and every other YouTube, you know, YouTube and all these things. It is now the most popular channel among young people. And these average videos are about 35 seconds long, these micro bursts, they are training young people's brains to receive information in tiny little packets. And so this bodes poorly for the church, which is, and Christian instruction, which is built around explaining complex theological concepts through the sermon, through the Bible study. I mean, how are we going to do this with a generation that's never spent more than 30 seconds on a single idea before they were off to the next one? It's going to be very, very challenging for the church to compete in that arena.
Which, by the way, and I don't want to go too far ahead here, but I know we touched on this last time, I think, which is part of your heart for starting the online preaching coach that you're that you're coming up with. I'm sure it relates to the writing of this book as well.
Yeah, I am in January of 2021. I will be offering a preaching, what I call the online preaching coach. And I'm going to be teaching pastors a comprehensive plan to expand the influence and the reach of their preaching ministries. And it's going to be everything from how to preach in a visual culture. You know, most seminary taught you to stand there for 40 minutes waving a Bible. That ain't going to get it done. People will not watch that online. How to cut a few seconds out of your sermon and put that on TikTok or other social media that will draw people back to the larger teaching. Pastors need to be speaking where the people are. You know, Paul didn't just preach in the synagogue. He took his message out to Mars Hill. Well, the Mars Hill of today is social media. It's online. This is where the non-Christians are. If we're going to win the world to Christ, we have to be where the world is. And so I want to be training pastors on how to be better online teachers and communicators, and you know, how to shorten their and focus their sermons, and just be more effective in that arena, because screen time is changing the way we absorb information. Not for the better, but it's a reality we have to deal with. And if we're going to contend for the gospel, we have to contend where people are, and we have to communicate the way they understand.
Dave, take us through the book a little bit. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. So describe the book. What do you cover in there? And are there solutions to this? Can we reduce people's screen time? Are there things that we can do to improve the situation? Or is, as you said, just the reality that we're going to deal with from this time forward?
Okay, thanks for asking three questions in one. I'll try to get all three of them. The cool thing about this book is it's based on five parables. It starts off with five little stories. I love parables because I have a lot of respect for Jesus. He was known to use a parable or two. So the parables explain how screen time has gradually gotten higher and higher. They explain why we're so attuned to novelty. Probably my favorite of the five parables is using the life of King David as an example. King David starts off as a poor, impoverished shepherd boy with no privileges, no perks, no prerogatives. Everything is just kind of thrown at him in life, right? eventually ascends to the throne. And within the kingdom, all of a sudden, he can order whatever food he wants. He can have sex all the time with a harem of women. He can, his decrees are heard throughout the land. He has a cabinet of yes men around him who tell him he is always right. Every one of these things has a parallel in the screen world. When we enter the screen world, we have a harem of women who are there to fulfill our every desire. We can tap on our phones and food appears magically at our door. We can post our opinions for all the world to see whether they're right, wrong, or indifferent. We have a yes men called algorithms that are whispering in our ears 24 hours a day, telling us how right we are and how wrong everybody else is. We have become the isolated the King Davids within our digital kingdoms. And it's not good. We are not meant to exercise dominion in this world. We are meant to be under the dominion of Christ. Yet the digital world allows us to exercise dominion that is making us sick. It's making us unhealthy. It's making us opinionated. It's making us ignorant. And we've got to disconnect from these screens and stop building these digital kingdoms and learn to reintegrate into the real world where we do not have dominion. And, that's part of the whole snowflake phenomenon we're seeing. Children who've grown up digital are used to a world that they can control and manipulate. And when they hear an opinion they don't like, they try to cancel it, unfriend it the way they did on social media. And when that doesn't happen, you have censorship, you have cancel culture. So it's happening on the right, it's happening on the left, it's happening to young and old people. This digital kingdom is pernicious, and it's really, really destroying a lot of lives.
Man, that was, I thank you for verbalizing it that way. That's compelling. And so I can hear some guys possibly who have a theological bent to them pushing back on this idea of dominion. I agree that Christ has dominion. All authority on heaven and earth has been given to him, and we are submitted to him. But some would say, wait a second, weren't we given dominion over the earth to multiply?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Right. We exercise dominion under the authority of Christ. We are not meant to live in a world where everything goes according to our plans. Instead, we are meant to live in the real world where we bring the Spirit of God with us and transform the world into a outpost of the kingdom of God, to use a metaphor. The problem with the digital world is everything instantly conforms to our desires. And that is actually godlike power. And it's unhealthy, and it's not the type of dominion we're supposed to exercise. We are supposed to be out in the real world exercising the power of the Holy Spirit and bringing about the kingdom of God that way, rather than having an artificial reality placed before us. Do you see the difference?
Definitely. Really well said. Thank you, David.
Okay, so we've got this very attractive world that we can customize, or that in these days really customizes itself to our even unspoken desires, just based on our trends and what we've looked at and so on. So how do we get out from under this? What are some steps we can take, or what are some things we can do? Because it's always going to be attractive, right? I mean, it's a quote, safe place to go. I'm the king. I can have things the way
brain.
I want.
What we need to do is we need to recognize where our danger spots are. For example, if you're the type of person who immediately comes home from work and flicks on the TV just to have background noise, you're in danger because that TV will eventually suck you in. That was my dad. My dad, if the Murrows were home and awake, the television was on. Okay, we always had TV in the background. And that's still a reality for a lot of people. If you're the type of guy, if you have a spare moment, you pick up your phone and you start scrolling the web, or there's certain sites you go to, that's a danger zone. If you go to social media or whatever to feel better about yourself and make your opinions seem confirmed and the other side feel stupid, if you consume that type of media, you're in danger. So it has to come from realization. It comes through prayer. It comes through asking God, God, help me see these blind spots. If you're the type of person who immediately flicks on video games, and you find your affirmation through these artificial conquests rather than conquests in the real world. You know, if you're not out, building a life, instead of you're building a World of Warcraft or a Minecraft fake world, that's a danger spot for you. So the discernment is the first step. And then the second step is, I think you need accountability. If you're really serious about getting back into the real world, you need to work with others. You need to say, hey, I'm going to limit my screen time. There are some wonderful tools, even from Apple, or some of these other screen providers, they've realized that they've gone too far in sucking you in. And so there are screen time reports available. You can have those emailed to a friend and you can say, hey, you know, I'm trying to cut back. Would you please hold me accountable? Mutual accountability in the area of pornography use. There's a program called Covenant Eyes that uses a buddy system. If you're having trouble digging out of the pit of pornography, why is pornography so attractive? Well, because men are hormonally predisposed to be attracted to naked women. We're not meant to see one every 5 seconds. And so these pornographers use our brain chemistry against us. You need accountability. You need a buddy who's going to say, look, I'm going to bust you if you visit these sites. And so these sorts of things, you need to put these guardrails in place. And one of the things that really discourages me is sometimes I hear Christians saying, well, those things aren't in the Bible. Yeah, but neither is online. You know, television is not in the Bible. You know, video is not in the Bible. So we have to respond to modern challenges, not word for word what the Bible says, but in the spirit of the Bible.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I think of is when Jesus says the eyes are the window to the soul. And the darkness that's in that can be inside of us, depending on what our eyes are focused on.
Right.
Yeah, there are definitely things that translate exactly, because obviously technology is different now than it was then.
Well, the Bible says for us to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Well, where are our eyes fixed 9 hours a day? They're not fixed on Jesus. You know, they're fixed on this artificial world that tells us how smart we are and how dumb everybody else is. And that is so bad for us.
Yeah, it really is.
Hey guys, this is Mike Hatch. Thank you so much for listening to the Empowered Manhood podcast. I wanted to encourage you to check out the amazing men's devotional, Daily Strength for Men. It's actually one of the best-selling men's devotionals on Amazon right now, and it's written by our very own co-host, Chris Bollinger. Make sure you check that out. You can get it on Amazon, or you can get it if you decide to join a CLC Getting Real group somewhere near you. And if you're interested in learning more about CLC, make sure you jump on our website at clchq.org. That's clchq.org. Or if you're a pastor and want to learn more about CLC, you can email me at mhatch@clchq.org. Again, that's mhatch@clchq.org. So then, okay, so I've got a 12-year-old son, and it is, I'm sure other guys who are listening probably relate to this. It is a constant battle. And I literally have seen my son, and my wife and I talk about this. He changes, like his personality changes after being on screen time, not necessarily TV as much, but more so video games sometimes, but more so when he's on his phone or when he's on his iPad. Roblox, for example, that's a game that he plays often.
All right, so I'm going to stop you right there. Let me make a distinction. There are two types of screen time. There is lean forward and lean back.
Yeah.
Lean forward is interactive screen time where you're actively changing what happens on the screen. Mm-hmm. Lean back is like where you're just watching a movie or a television show or whatever, right? Lean forward, interactive screen time is way more engaging to the brain because you're actually manipulating what happens. And that's why your son is turning into a monster. Is because his entire brain, his entire consciousness is involved in that screen. It's taking way more of his brain power than it would be just to sit back and watch Spider-Man, you know, fling himself from building to building. So most parents have taken the exact opposite approach to the one they should. They limit television and movies because they think of these things as not beneficial, but they allow online screen time because it can be justified as educational or whatever. Right?
Yeah.
That's not what you want to do. You want to limit lean forward screen time because that's robbing and hijacking their brain. It's flooding their brain with dopamine because it's novelty, 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 novelty. Mm. We're meant to live in a world where 98% of the time we're in monotony. Mm. We're not meant to be 98% novelty. Our brain simply cannot handle the load of dopamine that we are pouring into them every day. That's what's turning your kid into a monster. And if I could, can I build off of that just a little
Please
bit?
Please do. Yeah.
Another
definitely.
Example from the book. How many, I'm sure most of your readers have seen the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm-hmm. So there was this magic golden ring here. I've got a replica here.
Sweet.
And so what? No, it's just my wedding ring.
Oh man. I was like, where'd you get that?
I threw it in the fire and words came out of it. So there was this magic ring, and it was possessed by this creature named Gollum.
Okay? Yep.
So what was so magic about the ring is when you put it on your finger, you would suddenly become invisible to the people around you. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when we see Frodo, you know, when he's trying to take the ring to Mordor, he's in dangerous situations and he puts the ring on his finger. But as soon as he becomes invisible to those around him, mm-hmm. he becomes visible to this evil lord who instantly knows where he is. Well, yeah. this is a perfect analog for what screen time does to children. If our children are making a noise or a fuss or a ruckus, we can hand them a tablet or a phone and instantly they disappear. They're fussing, they're crying, everything goes away, right?
Wow.
But they suddenly become visible to extremists who want their minds, companies that want their money, and predators who want their body. So we expose them to evil forces. Now you can say, well, David, I give my kid a tablet, but it's completely locked down. It's all the parental controls on it. I say, you're still teaching your son or daughter to go to a screen the moment they feel upset. And the screen soothes them. Now, how are you going to take that screen away from them when they are 12? Yeah. They've been taught for the last nine years that screens are the place you go to calm yourself. So I tell parents no screens, no personal screens until they're at least 14. They're not allowed to have a personal screen because it will teach them to spend those idle moments in this artificial screen world where, of course, they are lord and master.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that because my son has said before in his more honest moments when we've gotten to talk about this, he said the real world or the world that is outside the screen time, I think is what he said was, it's so disappointing.
Yeah, it's not providing him dopamine. He has no dominion, right?
Yep.
All kinds of bad things happen to him. He can't control what happens. He's not lord and master. And so, you know, I mean, if David were suddenly abdicated from the throne, which his sons tried to do with him, well, it happened to him. Remember, he had to go into exile. What happened to him? People were throwing rocks at him.
Yep.
They were cursing him and stuff like that. That's what the real world is like to a screen addict. That's like being in exile from the place you love. I'm going to keep going on this one too, because I'm on a roll. Sure. I got to keep going.
Do it, man. Do it.
Dopamine.
All right. So you can't take your son's 12. You can't take Roblox away from him. But what you can do is you can put limits on it. And so I find the most helpful limit is personal screens are surrendered at dinner time. Okay. Once we come to the table, my screens and my kids' screens all go onto a charger that's in my bedroom behind a locked door or whatever it has to be. All right. Mm-hmm. And we have screen-free evenings. We read books. We build blanket forts. We go for bike rides. You make that 12-year-old get out into nature as much as he hates it. Right. Yeah. You do a project with him. You rake leaves. You do whatever it takes to get him back into the real analog world. And you say, I'm sorry, I know you want your screen, but we're going to have screen-free evenings because you have to master the art of being in the real world. This is where your future wife comes from. This is where your future career comes from. This is where your education comes from. Every good thing in life is in this world and not in that one. You see how it goes.
That's great. Yeah. And in that world, I know that's where you find that God is faithful.
Absolutely, because you're never going to test God when you're playing Roblox.
Right. That's right.
Right.
So you gave an example of what you could do with the family, with the kids. So all the phones go on chargers for the evening. And then obviously the kids don't take them to bed. They go to bed without their phones. But just as I used to cheat with desserts when I had kids, they would get one cookie, I would get three because I argued that I had a bigger stomach. I think a lot of parents will cheat when it comes to the phones too. So the kids go to bed and then the parents' phones come back out. So what are some guidelines for the adults in the room to reduce their screen time as well?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I think most of us, once the bedroom door is closed, would be tempted to check our screens one more time. I think if you're just looking to see if an important email came in, that's different than sitting down and playing an hour and a half of words with friends or whatever it is. So, don't be too hard on yourself if that's your situation. My wife and I, sometimes when we're relaxing, you know, we're just laying in bed, we might watch an episode of a good wholesome television show to kind of relax. One of the things you want to do if you do watch TV as you're headed for bed is you want to do it on a laptop or a tablet that can change colors. Right. The blue light that comes out of a screen will tell your pineal gland that it's daytime and will keep you awake. I have all my devices are set. It's called in the Apple world, it's called night shift.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so at 8 p.m., all my Apple devices turn brown. Mm-hmm. They take on this evening tone that tells my brain that it's time to relax and go to sleep. It's the same light that we see when the sun sets and becomes more orange. Candle and firelight is that orange light. And then my screens do it as well. So there are a lot of practical things that you can do if you are going to cheat and look at a little bit of screen content after the kids have gone to bed.
Well, you made a good point there in your example, which is watching something with your wife. Mm-hmm. So that's the alternative to, okay, I'm watching this on my phone and you're watching that on your phone. We're doing separate things in the bedroom on our separate devices.
Yeah, we always watch together. Right now we're rewatching Downton Abbey, which is, a really great show that, that explores how culture changed in the 1920s and 30s and that sort of thing. Beautifully shot. It's just a very relaxing pace. We wouldn't watch something real high adventure or high energy. We're not going to watch Vin Diesel before we go to bed. That's just going to rile up our brains. So, we're very careful about what we expose ourselves to online. And the shows we watch high quality programs that enforce, if not explicitly Christian, at least explicit that show Christian morality or in line with that, because we don't want to be negatively influenced by what we see.
And Mike, just as your son becomes a different person when he is playing a game on his tablet, I worked in the tech world for 25 years and I worked for Wi-Fi companies in the early 2000s. So I had Wi-Fi in the home before most people did. And Dave, you mentioned checking emails. I always had emails. I worked for Cisco. I had 500 emails a day, right? Mm-hmm. But that became an excuse. I'd have my laptop before we had smartphones. I had my laptop open and I was checking emails, but I was also doing other work and I retreated into my laptop safe zone and ignored everybody in the room. So I had to be taught that lesson, which was, close the lid. And
I did the same thing. That was one of the impetuses for me writing the book. My kids and my wife actually had an intervention with me like in 2004 in the early days of Wi-Fi. Yeah. And they said, Dad, you're here, but you're not here. And that shocked me. I had no idea because I would look up for my laptop, but I needed to close the darn thing. I needed to give them my, not 80% of my idea or 40% of my attention. They needed my whole attention.
Right. Right.
And because your kids are only small for a little while, you need to be giving them show them God's grace with your face.
Yeah. And I agree. I was in the same room, right? I was there. I was physically there, but I wasn't really there. And so now phones have just made it that much worse because we all had, you look at, we used to observe this in restaurants maybe 6-7 years ago that a family would come into a restaurant and other than ordering food and eating their food, they were on their screens the entire meal. Nobody was conversing.
There's actually a phrase for that, a name for that. It's called being alone together. It was coined by an MIT professor by the name of Shelley Turkle, I think her name is. So what that does is that describes a very typical scene in a home where, daughter might be on Instagram, mom might be playing Candy Crush on her tablet, son is blasting away aliens on a video game, and dad's, surfing the web or something like that. So you have all four members of the family, and the only one that's in the analog world is the dog.
Yeah.
Everybody else is completely absorbed in their screen.
And nobody's talking,
other than the dog who needs to go
right
out.
What a sad indictment. So okay, this might be a curveball, so I hope not. But I read a book written in 2017 that was by a guy named Kevin Kelly, and it's called The Inevitable: Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future, and he's kind of he thinks highly of Silicon Valley and the mission they have to, bring humans to that next evolutionary stage through when technology, the metaverse or singularity maybe is another term for it. So he's of that mindset, but he talks about just glowingly in these great terms, like how wonderful it's going to be when there will be screens everywhere. Mm-hmm. Big screens in your windows, screens on, mm-hmm. you know, on the, and it's, you, we're seeing that, I think, to some extent. I'm seeing even billboards are becoming electronic, and you're seeing screens that way. Do you see that coming down the road? And does that give you pause to that? Wow, we really do need to prepare.
Absolutely. I mean, one of my five parables is the Matrix.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that story, right?
It's, right.
We have traded real life for an artificial reality that's better.
Hmm.
I mean, the real world is a post-apocalyptic hellhole that's been destroyed by war, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Morpheus shows Neo what the real world is like on a screen, an old retro television, by the way.
Yeah.
And so what the Matrix does, it allows us to live in an artificial world that's better than the hell of the real world. And so this is what this expansion of the metaverse and expansion of all these options does for us. It gives us this digital kingdom, which in we're over which we reign as Lord and Master. We're completely safe. Every decision is ours. You know, who to come in, who comes in and who comes out is ours. What we experience is ours. And I don't think that's an upgrade, because the real world will continue to deteriorate. We will simply be batteries for a larger, you know, to be used for another larger and more destructive purpose. We need men in the arena. We don't need men plugged into the Matrix.
That's a great way of saying it. Yeah. And I've talked to men about this as I've ministered as a men's pastor, that we need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And when you're in the real world, kind of like what, going back to what my son said, it's so disappointing. And I think a lot of men feel that way too. But really, when you engage in that reality, and you embrace the suck, as some people would say, it actually builds a tolerance. And again, realizing the faithfulness of God, and you grow in your ability to engage in that effectively.
Yes, and there's fewer and fewer men who've experienced that. I mean, we've got a video game mentality. We get shot with an arrow, and then we find a little magic potion of salve, and we're instantly healed. I mean, that's how the video game world works. How does the real world work? You come out and you see your tire is flat.
Yeah.
There's no magic salve you can put on your tire and it's instantly reinflated. We've created this expectation that life should be easy, that there should be a solution to every problem. That's where a lot of wokeism is coming from. You know what the woke philosophy?
Yeah.
Gosh, there's a solution to every problem. Police are strangling Black men. Let's defund the police. There's this easy, obvious solution.
Right.
There's this magic salve that we can just put on the problem. And so we're seeing younger generations reaching for that magic potion that they got accustomed to finding in the video world. And it has disastrous consequences in the real world.
Do you think with the pandemic that some people may be reaching screen saturation, where they're, you know, they want to come out of the cave and shield their eyes and get back in the real world, or not?
We are seeing a counter movement. We're seeing a counter revolution. A lot of people are digital detoxing. They are putting limits on their screen time. Obviously, one of the best solutions you can do, pick up your smartphone and say, "Hey Siri, set a timer for 20 minutes and then set the thing down, surf the web for 20 minutes. When Siri rings at you, you put the thing away. You've got to build guardrails into your life. And people are doing that. They're either completely what's called a dopamine fast. They're not doing any sort of artificial screen-based dopamine stimulation. They're getting away for the weekend, getting away from screens, playing the guitar, knitting, hiking, doing whatever they're into in the real world. And we're seeing that a lot. It's kind of started in California and in the Silicon Valley area, but it's spreading to other parts of the country. And then there's the other thing, like I said, people are putting limits on themselves. You know, I really need to be more faithful. I do it some, but I need to be more faithful. When I sit down to do my emails, I need to say, "Hey Siri, set a timer for 20 minutes, put the thing down." And if I'm not done in 20 minutes, I go back to my work.
That's great.
So, you know, technology can help us defeat technology if we use it properly. Fight fire with fire.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So David, as guys out there listening to this, it feels maybe overwhelming to some guys to think about getting off. Give us one tip that might just get us, you know, to the 50-yard line, you know, might just get us that first quick step or victory.
I would say the first thing that we need to do is focus on eliminating mindless screen time. And these were the moments that we used to devote to resting our brains, to meditation, to prayer, to thinking about nothing, as Mark Unger likes to say, being in our nothing box.
Nothing box.
We need to get back into our nothing box. So the moments I'm talking about are like when you get home and you flick on the TV, stop doing that. When you get home and you immediately pick up the game controller, that's mindless. You haven't thought about it. It's not a goal you set. You just pick the thing up and you start blasting away. Those moments in the airport where you're waiting for your bags, don't flick out your phone. Instead, look around and see if people need help. Be the hands and feet of Jesus. Pray for them. When you're on the tarmac waiting for your plane to take off, when you're standing in line at the grocery store or the bank, redeem those moments for Christ. Give those moments back to the Lord instead of giving them to Candy Crush or Fox News or Legend of Zelda or whatever game or diversion you play on your phone. Give those moments back to God and you'll be halfway to conquering your screen addiction.
That's great. David, thank you so much, man. This has been a great conversation. Real quick though, before we go, where can folks find you if they want to learn more? Do you have a website? Tell us a little bit about that.
DavidMoreau.com is my new site. That's where I'm aggregating all my content. We're going to be redirecting Church for Men there very soon. And I'm also going to be launching the online preaching coach at that address. So DavidMoreau.com, and that's MURROW.
Fantastic. David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.